Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name's Joe Kuzma, and I have returned with my partner in crime, the 1A to my 1B. I don't know which ones we are. Maybe can you have two 1As? I don't know. We'll try and figure it out. But he's here, a one, Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, what's going on?
I'm living in a material world, and I am not a girl of any kind, so I'm not.
You trailed off there a little bit as you realized maybe that wasn't the best way to start the show, but you know, we're gonna jump right into it, not to even beat around the bush, because this might get a little long-winded today. I guess the Steelers, well, not the Steelers directly, but the NFL, you know, they've been replaying games. I'm not going to call them all. I can't call this one necessarily a classic game. Maybe for Steelers fans it is. 2000 and let me go look at this. It was 2015, I believe. I saw this post. This is what made me made this like jump into my brain. I don't know why they showed this game particularly. Maybe it was because some people still have a little bit of wet feet on whether or not Ben Roethlisberger is going to come back and play to Ben Roethlisberger expectations this season. And the game in question was back in 2015. It was played on October 12th, Monday Night Football at San Diego, formerly the San Diego Chargers. Once again, another one of these games where Steelers Nation took over the stadium. However, Ben Roethlisberger was not under center. The Steelers at this point were entering the game 2-2 for this primetime encounter. They had lost Ben just a couple of games earlier at formerly St. Louis with the St. Louis Rams. There was a game played there in week 3 that was absolutely like watching paint dry, a 12-6 victory against the Rams on the road. The Steelers improved to 2-1. That was after they had lost their opening game. They had to go on a Thursday night to New England for all of that rah-rah, yuck-yuck, let's give them the ring type crap and everything again. Probably, I don't know if the Patriots won the Super Bowl that year, but seeing as they win like every other year, probably a safe bet. I'm just going off the top of my head here. There was a win at home against the 49ers, and then the aforementioned road trip to the Rams. Now they had to once again come home on a short week Thursday night playing against the Baltimore Ravens. And this was an interesting season, Brian. The reason this all comes in full circle here is because Michael Vick ended up being the backup quarterback at this time. And I saw, you know, I saw several posts about this game, about the game in question after this Ravens game. This Ravens game was an overtime loss, by the way, 23-20 on that Thursday night. A mini bye, extended mini bye, because then the Steelers get to go to a Monday night game on the road with Michael Vick once again with a very anemic offense. And a lot of folks remember this game as the one where Le'Veon Bell had the stretched out touchdown at the end. You remember his arm. I believe he had the pink sleeve for the breast cancer awareness, et cetera, et cetera. Some people said he was down. Some people wanted holding. But regardless, the Steelers end up winning that game 24-20. Ben had his issues. He was banged up for a little while. I don't think he comes back yet for another couple of games, but there's some other things that go on here. And the reason we're bringing all this up is just all of this hysteria recently about the Steelers need to go and sign Jameis Winston. The Steelers need to go and sign Cam Newton. Yeah, you're rolling your eyes, Brian. I know. And so people saw this game and they were like, that's when we had a real backup quarterback. That's when they went out and got a veteran. Well, the circumstances weren't that they didn't bring Vic in like as a free agent necessarily. He was sitting there collecting dust. This was his last season in the NFL. And the reason he was collecting dust was that no team had wanted to sign him at that point. I think he had just come off of the Jets roster most recently. And that was an embarrassing loss. You're shaking your head. That was an embarrassing loss when the Steelers went to New York or New Jersey or whatever you call that area. And they went there, and the Jets weren't necessarily a good team. I think they only won like one or two games at that point. They beat the Steelers at their home, and everyone was embarrassed about Michael Vick beating them. And then lo and behold, you know, here he comes. He comes to Pittsburgh. And just one disclaimer is, you know, this talk doesn't center about anything Vick did off the field or any of the, you know, the crimes or the what do you want to say, the penance that he paid in order to do his debt to society, as you may want to call it. We're just focusing on the football stuff here, so please keep it clean in the comments. It's not entirely at all Michael Vick discussion here either, but the reason he was brought in is because Bruce Gradkowski, shoulder problems. Bruce had barely thrown a pass in a Steelers uniform, but he was still the backup. Ben had been healthy all this time. This is probably the most recent season where you had Ben Roethlisberger banged up, injured, unavailable, with the exception of last season, of course. But up to this point, people were trying to draw some parallels. I just couldn't believe, like, one of the things that I read was, and this blew your mind when I just said it off the air, there was a lot of praise. Man, you know, Michael Vick, he helped keep the ship afloat and all these other things. And Brian, I got to start asking this question, and we're going to do this not only with Vick, but a few others. Are our memories of these backup quarterbacks that the Steelers have had over the years, particularly the Ben Roethlisberger era, are the memories more rosy than what they actually were? Are they better memories than what actually occurred?
You know, speaking as someone who has many memories, because I'm old, as you like to point out.
well, you still have them. That's good.
And I have them. You know, hindsight, they like to say hindsight is 20/20, but it's not always. We do look at the past through rose-colored glasses. And anybody who wants to look back at the incredibly short-spanned Michael Vick era of Pittsburgh Steeler football and think that was something to be happy about, I think they got the Rona or something. I don't know. There's something, something's going on there. They've been taking Quadriquil or whatever the heck that malaria drug is.
Hydrochloric or whatever, the fish tank cleaner.
What they've been taking is nutso pills, because that was some of the worst offense we've ever seen, you know, rivaling last season, if not worse than times last season. It was terrible. There was very little good to come forward with that. Vic couldn't find Antonio Brown. You know, I mean, I'm aghast, completely aghast that people would look back on those relatively few games. What was it, like five games he was in, three started? Like
he appeared in six, but I think the one was to just kneel out the close out the game against the 49ers. So and technically five, and they weren't all starts either, because he came in third quarter, I believe, of that Rams game.
Yeah, it just wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. And I, you know, I don't think I'm looking back with whatever negative colored glasses, black colored glasses, I don't know,
black
shade
and
colored glasses, black and gold colored glasses, to say there's nothing good to look back at. You know, the fact that they won that game in the Chargers game, remember how awful it was watching that game? And you know, I know they put it on there as a classic, and I thought to myself, why would you rebroadcast that? Just because of the 3 seconds at the end of the game? Because that was the game. The entire joy that came out of that game occurred at the very end. Everything else, you just wanted to pull what little hair, you know, you may. Maybe you had a full set of hair at that point. I don't know. But, you know, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Well, my friend, I got some stats for you. I'm glad you brought up Antonio Brown, because I didn't as part of my cursory research here. But somebody had said, hey, look, we had a good quarterback like Michael Vick who helped keep everything, you know, pretty much upright until Ben came back from injury. That wasn't remotely true at all. In fact, Vick only played like half of that span where Ben was gone, and I'll get to that in a second. He came in at that week three game against the Rams. The Steelers were up 9-0 before Ben got hurt. The offense sucked before Vick even got in there, but Vick didn't lead the team to a single first down. Not one. He played nearly two full quarters. The other 3 points, there was a Will Allen interception of Nick Foles that gave them great field position. They went 3-and-out again, and I think it was like a 26-yard field goal at that point. The Steelers end up winning that game 12-9. They almost lost that game. I got to pull it back up. Where did it go? Da-da-da-da-da. Here it is, 12-6, not 12-9. So in doing that, you just had me look up some of the stats with Vic. I'm going to bring up this this game in particular because Antonio Brown against the then St. Louis Rams was targeted 13 times in this game. He caught 11 passes for 108 yards, no touchdowns, but still, you know, AB doing AB things as he used to back then, right? And in that game itself, only one of those 13 targets came by way of Michael Vick, which was an incomplete pass. All the rest were from Ben Roethlisberger. So they did not connect at all. He falls off a cliff, Antonio Brown does. We're talking an all-pro wide receiver who, up until this point, was catching at least five passes a game, five for 55 or 50 yards. He had some streak going like that, and he had a reception like every single game for the better part of 2.5 seasons. This streak was going on. He goes down to nine targets, only five of those for 42 yards. Against the Ravens, and then against the Chargers, once again, Mike Vick also starting three receptions on the six targets for 45 yards, and then he only had three receptions again off of eight targets against the Cardinals. Now, the thing is, I got to look up the Cardinals game because Michael Vick did not play the entire game. So actually, Michael Vick only completed one of his three passes to AB in that particular contest. It was, you know, there were times where Vic actually looked worse than we would have thought for a guy that was, what, you know, he wasn't even that old at that point, was he? Let me bring this up. I want to say he was like 36 at that point, 35 years old, so he was younger than what Ben is now, or even Ben like 2-3 seasons ago, and he was a veteran guy, but geez, oh man, it was 40 completions on 66 attempts. He actually got the 60.6% completions somehow for only 371 yards. Two touchdowns, one pick. Probably should have had a heck of a lot more. And when you, I think most of you might remember that Ravens game, which came just before the Chargers one. The Steelers blew a 20-7 lead because they got real conservative in that game. They wouldn't let Vic throw the ball, is what it amounted to. And the Ravens just kept stacking the box. And Justin Tucker kicked like 80 bazillion field goals and ended up losing in OT. I remember that one very specific for, I think Vic like rolled out on the one play, kind of ad-libbed on his own. And then there was one, like it was like a bootleg with AB wide open, and I think it fell in the dirt. I remember Antonio Brown, I mean, it's hard to believe right now, but he was very emotional, right? That became AB, like he went nuts. But back then, you know, he didn't really always show like a frustration like that. I remember the chin straps coming off and everything like that because the two just couldn't connect whatsoever. In fact, over that period of time, Antonio Brown, let's find it here, off of Michael Vick, 19 attempts, only 9 receptions for 85 yards, no scores. You got to understand, with Ben Roethlisberger, he caught 116 passes with 10 touchdowns. He actually caught 12 off of Landry Jones off of 17, so he had a 70.6 catch rate off of that, but 47.4 catch rate whenever Michael Vick was throwing anything in his direction. Only 4 first downs from Michael Vick over the course of 4 to 5 games here, whatever you want to call it, 4.5 games, or maybe 4 because the Cardinals won. Vick ends up leaving a little later in this game, but before that was this Chargers replay, right? Vic went 13 of 26. That's a perfect 50% completion percentage, and that's not good. He had one TD, one pick, should have had more, 203 yards, sacked 3 times, and guess what they did? They drew up a play in the dirt. They completed it to Marcus Wheaton, if you remember that correctly. I believe it was Marcus Wheaton. And that kind of set them up for where Bell goes into the Wildcat. They didn't even have Vic take the snap for the game-winning play. So you're remembering this, and you remember the one play and all the good feels of everything of them winning, but none of that had to do with Michael Vick.
No, none of it. And, you know, this fascination with a veteran backup quarterback, and the nonstop, I mean, because it just hasn't stopped. And please, please stop the nonstop decrying of not signing Jameis Winston or that we have to sign Cam Newton. Cam Newton doesn't want to be a backup. Let's just be clear. He wants to start someplace. He said it very clearly. And all these guys, both these guys, I mean, you know, Jameis Winston went to where he felt comfortable, where he thought, okay, maybe I'm going to sit for at most a year, and it's an area that I know because, you know, that's the division he played in. Cam Newton's going to want to do something similar if he can't start. They don't want to come and sit behind Ben Roethlisberger. and basically not get any snaps all season long. They're trying to convince the league that they still have potential, which means they need the potentiality of showing what they can do. And that's, you know, and obviously, look, if you're a Debbie Downer, you're like, oh, no, they're going to play this year because Ben's going to be hurt and that's the end of the world. I don't think that way. I think Ben has been more consistently healthy over the last few seasons than hurt. So I expect Ben to play the majority of the games. And if that's the case, then what are these guys doing? Plus, where are they going to get the money to pay them? Because they don't want to come in and make a vet minimum wage. It's just there's something to be said about people thinking the grass is always greener on the other side and we have to have this. You don't. You just don't. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, Cam Newton hasn't been that good for several years anyway. Look at what his team has done. They haven't been great. Remember what the Steelers did to him not that many years ago. And yeah, he's battled injuries and you know, he may or may not have been used to the fullest potential. And Jameis Winston threw 30 interceptions. Come on. And you guys are dying for him. And you're about to crucify Ben for throwing 19 in a season. Winston throws 30 and you're like, oh, he's the savior. Come on. Have some consistency.
Well, it's funny, you know, you're mentioning Winston. I'm just going to go back and look because the cure-all always is having the next guy in line is drafting someone. And both names I'm going to bring up after this were both guys that were brought in by the Steelers via the draft. But before that is Jameis Winston, of course, drafted number one overall. Tampa Bay Buccaneers 2015 NFL Draft. Right behind him is Marcus Mariota with the second overall pick to the Tennessee Titans. Neither of those guys worth a flip aren't with their original teams and are now backups. They had their chances, and you saw what ended up happening. Sometimes this is just what happens. The other guys, well, the New Orleans Saints took Garrett Grayson. And yeah, so now they have Jameis Winston, and I'll tell you how good Garrett Grayson ended up being with them. The St. Louis Rams had Sean Mannion. The New York Jets in the fourth round took Bryce Petty. Green Bay Packers took Brett Hundley in the fifth round. And then Trevor Siemian, believe it or not, seventh round pick, Denver Broncos, almost Mr. Irrelevant. And didn't he like make the Pro Bowl or something by like a bunch of people just being injured or not wanting to go? Or
yes, something crazy.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Hey, he's a Big Ten guy, Northwestern. I mean, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I'm just shrugging my shoulders. Brett Hundley's the interesting one here because I like to point out when he came in 2017, the Green Bay Packers losing Aaron Rodgers, and the Green Bay Packers that year did not have the best of seasons. You have Hundley starting 9 games, appearing in 11 of them. He had a 3-6 overall record, just a little bit better than a 60% completion percentage, 9 touchdowns to 12 picks, 1,800 and some yards, and they didn't do very well, period. They went 7-9 and up third in their division in the NFC North. And that's kind of what ends up happening. I think everybody just thinks, well, you're going to draft a guy, they're going to come in and they're going to be immediately great. And I know that's a lot of the flack. The reason people are talking about people like Vic, Cam Newton, Jameis Winston in this context is because of Mason Rudolph and the season he had. But not only him, but, you know, he got hurt and he ended up out not only once, but twice during the season. He gets thrown in. He had zero experience, much like Hundley. At least you look at Rudolph and he had a 5-3 quarterback record. Some of that attributed to another Ravens overtime loss. What is with those games? They got to come in the Steelers' direction, right? But just putting that into perspective with Hundley, completes 62.2% of his passes, 1,765 yards, almost to the 18-something Hundley had, but 13 touchdowns to the 9, and then 9 interceptions to the 12. Far more efficient, much better touchdown to interception ratio, maybe not as many yards, but also more completions, almost the same. They're in the mid to high 200s on the attempts here, Brian. Just to put those guys in perspective, and of course, you have Mason Rudolph appearing in 10 games and starting 8 versus the 11-9. So if you give one more game to the direction of Rudolph and starting, they probably... unless Rudolph has another one of those 4 interception games, like with the bad setup to fail Thursday night game against the Cleveland Browns, which we hated as soon as they put it on paper, they announced that game. We're like, hey, we're set up to fail. You put Rudolph out there. He throws four picks. That guy only threw five interceptions the rest of the year. I mean, that's pretty solid. What else can you ask of a backup quarterback? I need to smack the desk because everybody's just thinking immediately we need a next Hall of Famer that's going to replace Ben Roethlisberger, or we need a guy that's already been a starter somewhere else, because immediately when they come to be a backup with the Steelers, they won't be as stinky as they were starting somewhere else, because – by God, this is the Pittsburgh freaking Steelers. Everything turns. It's the Midas Pittsburgh black and gold touch on this that makes these guys go from bum and a free agent or yesterday's garbage to some type of, you take it to an antique store and they finally age and become this amazing little trinket that you find that's worth $1 million. It doesn't always work like that. So when you look at Mason's stats, and I think you could do the same thing if we look at Duck. I'm not going to look at Duck just because I know, man, Duck had it. We talked about people put in tough situations just the last show. That was definitely a tough situation for Duck Hodges. You're an undrafted guy who doesn't even get a contract until you get a rookie camp tryout, impress enough people, and come in as the fourth guy in camp. And then all of a sudden you're starting in the NFL in a primetime game, ironically against the Chargers as well. So it just... I don't want to get too much into Duck. We know there's limitations there. We know there could be a higher ceiling. You and I see Rudolph a different way, but I'm looking through the lens of a backup quarterback. And when I look at another one the Steelers drafted, I used to call him the GOAT. The XFL did not do well for Landry Jones, and maybe that the perception. So many people hated this poor guy. And when you look at his stats, he comes in. We're going back to this Michael Vick 2015 era season. Vick went 3 of 8 for 6 yards against the Cardinals before getting hurt. He comes out in the third quarter after going three of eight for 6 yards. Steelers were down 10-6. Cardinals were not that great of a team at this point. They were on paper, they looked good. They ended up crashing and burning a little bit after this, I believe. But Landry Jones came in third quarter. He goes 8 of 12, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns. Overall, 4 scoring drives, the other 2 being for field goals. The Steelers end up winning this game. And, coincidentally, I guess this is the last game that Vic appeared in for the Steelers, or an NFL game entirely. Ends up retiring after that. He had 6 appearances overall, and we mentioned the 40-66, 60.6%, 371 yards, 2 touchdowns and 1 interception, and 6. Like, we're saying actual 5 games, 2 touchdowns to 1 interception, and we're complaining about Mason Rudolph, and we're complaining about Duck Hodges. I guess maybe, you know, Vic carried the ball 20 times for 90 yards. Whoop-de-doo. That's what I got to say about that. Whoop-de-doo. Who cares? So he's a guy that played in the NFL for 13 seasons. This was his 13th season. And if he had any, you know, actual tangible value to the Steelers, they kept Landry Jones over bringing him back for another season. That should tell you everything you need to know. And I'm not knocking Landry Jones here, because I'm going to make some comparisons with him and another guy here in a second. But it just goes to show you, it's a backup quarterback position. The Steelers have fared better than some other teams in that regard, and that's because of other things that are there as far as their support system. There are other teams that came and find a starting quarterback, as we've talked about before, Brian, but worrying about having a top-notch, top-flight, all-star in reserve at every position, especially a quarterback, is just, I don't know, it's preposterous.
Well, yeah, that's a good word, preposterous. You cannot have starting caliber players at every level of your team. First of all, there just aren't enough players in the league that are of that caliber, let alone quarterbacks. For everybody, and you're right, we see Mason Rudolph a little differently because you think he's got a little more potential than I do. And again, I'm going to say this because I've said it repeatedly. I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it. And that's based on what we saw last year. But that being said, you got a rookie quarterback who went 5-3, had what, an 82 rating, compared to what Hundley did, as you were saying. Take those two comparisons. There you got a rookie quarterback, and the team ends up with a losing record. The Steelers get two, not just one rookie quarterback, two different rookie quarterbacks, one who's undrafted.
Well, first-time starter. Devlin Hodges. Second-year quarterback, but first-time starter.
Second-year quarterback, first-time starter. But basically rookie guys. And essentially, they managed to at least pull off an 8-8 season. And you know, you got people who want to throw Tomlin under the bus. Look, it is hard to win in this league consistently regardless. no matter what the people in New England will tell you, it is hard.
they're about to find out the hard way, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're going to find out big time just how hard it is. But it's much more difficult when the level of play at your quarterback position is not up to snuff. And, you know, nonetheless, you know, they did the best they could with what they had in those positions and were able to make something out of it. They put those guys in the best possible positions. Was it always great positions? Did it get figured out? Absolutely, because they both have limitations on what they can accomplish, and other teams eventually adapt to those those limitations. And once they do, it makes it even harder. But you know, to glorify Michael Vick's time with the Steelers as he was the savior that kept them on afloat is, like I said, please find my address, send me what you're smoking, because I could certainly use that kind of distraction.
Yeah, you know, couldn't we all, if we're, you know, still staying at home, not getting the fresh air, you're getting out of the Cheech and Chong van.
Or I'm getting some fresh air, you know that. But,
oh, yeah,
but,
you are.
I'm out and about.
You hiked some place known as like Hell's Gate or something like that. What was that?
The Devil's Path. The Devil's Path in the Catskills in New York State.
Well, that ends with in Hell's Gate, doesn't it? The Devil's
Path. I
don't
know. Might Hell's could
Gate.
Be
on the way to Mordor. And
I'm going back this week too. I'm going to hit three more peaks.
Man, he's a wild man. He really is. He truly is almost a mountain man.
I just got to find me my grizzly bear, and then I can be Grizzly Adam.
Yeah, I hope you're packing, man. I don't think you want to find the bear. I was just in the cabins myself, in a cabin 2 weeks ago, over, what do you want to call it, southeastern Ohio. So that was kind of fun. My wife's kind of like, will there really be bears out here? I'm like, well, it is like a nature preserve. I mean, there is wildlife. You just never know. But so don't leave any of don't leave food out on the back deck or anything in the cabin. You just never know what's going to show up trying to eat some of that. So the guy they draft a guy in the fourth round, comes by way of Oklahoma in the 2013 NFL draft, Landry Jones. What a wasted pick. Why are we going after this guy? Blah, blah, blah. And at the very most, he at least gets you a couple of wins here or there. I think most famously, though, he gets credited with a win where he only took like three snaps. And Ben Roethlisberger was the backup quarterback and set like a record for a backup coming into a game, an NFL game.
Yep.
But, you know, he comes into this Arizona game and it actually almost looks like, hey, this almost looks like what it used to look like. Antonio Brown just isn't like just some random guy wearing 84 out there. You know what I mean? Martavis Bryant, I know he did a little bit of the legwork there on a big TD, but that kind of stuff, you know, at least it turned the tide. And Landry had a halfway decent game too against the Oakland Raiders, where he ends up coming in. I think Ben went to come in and then ended up leaving. Of course, he had kind of a stinky game. But who didn't against the Kansas City Chiefs on the road that year too? Defense was particularly terrible. I think the Chiefs. Hey, you got to look this up, Brian. I think the Chiefs ran for like 200 yards. I'm going to find it. Hold on.
47,623 yards.
Almost 138. 29 attempts. 138. Actually, the Steelers outrushed them. 24 for 147, but still they couldn't stop anybody at all. And it was just, it was just nasty. And Kansas City possessed the ball an extra 5 minutes. And yeah, there were a couple picks in that game. And we know Landry kind of deer in headlights sometimes and the, like other quarterbacks doesn't see what's there. I haven't quite gotten that same kind of vibe from Mason. That's why I feel he has a higher ceiling. I don't know that the ball's necessarily put at risk or he just lets it fly. I know you're making the squinty face or whatever. Come on, man.
I'm making the squinty face.
You know, Landry would have thrown a pick too if he had Dante Moncrief attempting to catch the ball.
Somebody's got a frowny face. I don't think I agree with that. I question a lot of not Landry's decisions, although I did question
he probably
a lot of Landry's decisions. But I question a lot of Mason's decisions that he made at the time, more so from the standpoint of overly cautiousness.
Yes.
That's the bigger issue with me is with him is the unwillingness to try and you know, waiting for the guy to be 100% open. Guys aren't 100% open. It's rare in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you got to fit that ball into that tight window and take that chance. And the unwillingness to do so is part of the issue that I have with Lane, with Mason.
Well, and I don't think that gets fixed if you have a Michael Vick or Cam Newton or anybody else back there.
No, no, it doesn't.
That's certainly part of my point. Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston. Oh, geez, you know what? I was looking at the 2014 draft, too. I'd actually gone back one instead of forward. Blake Bortles, third overall. Johnny Manziel, 22 overall. Then you had Teddy Bridgewater to finish out the first round. Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo. Then it goes Logan Thomas, Tom Savage, Aaron Murray, AJ McCarron, and Zach Mettenberger. Those all read like a whole bunch of guys who had a lot of potential in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds that are largely unemployed now. And some of those names appeared in the AAF or XFL as well over that period of time. You just, even the names right off the top, Blake Bortles and Johnny Manziel, I mean, those don't strike you as hits in the first round, obviously. You go to 2016, you have Jared Goff, you have Carson Wentz, 1 and 2 overall. I still don't even know what to think of Goff and Wentz. I don't know that the Eagles do either since they took Jalen Hurts. So, you know, are they? Is that an insurance policy? Who knows? But the third guy to go in that draft, first round pick, 26th overall. He's on the Steelers roster. His name's Paxton Lynch. He went to the Denver Broncos. Yeah. He is on the Steelers practice squad and then, you know, got promoted. And then the Jets shocked the world at 51 and get Christian Hackenberg from Penn State, which, yeah, everyone felt that was kind of out there. The Patriots had Jacoby Brissett. He was still a starter, but, you know, the Colts were looking in a different direction here after Andrew Luck retired. Now they have Phillip Rivers. Let's see, Cody Kessler. Yeah, he's on the outs. Connor Cook, another guy that ended up – he didn't even end up starting in the XFL. And then Dak Prescott. Cardale Jones, one of our Ohio State guys, fourth rounder to the Buffalo Bills. Another XFL guy, Kevin Hogan, Nate Sudfeld. I'm not even going to go down through all the rest of these. Jeff Driscoll's still hanging around here, though. It's just, you know, these are all the quarterbacks that are coming out. You go to 2017. I don't think I want to go any much past 2017 because, you know,
you can stop there. You can definitely stop there because the prime example of a failure is sitting right there in that draft.
Well, they are, but you gotta look at 2017 right off the top. Second overall, Mitch Trubisky.
That's the one I'm talking about right there. That's the that's nearly Ryan Leaf capable failure.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bears got so screwed by that pick. The Bears got so taken by that pick and made such a mistake with Mitch Trubisky that, you know, look, here's a guy whose stats are Landry Jones-esque or Mason Rudolph-esque as a starter for three seasons. And, you know, come on. He's certainly an overdraft. But that's the fear that you have with quarterbacks. You never know for sure that they're going to be, you know, who you think they are. And, I mean, who went after him?
Who went after Mitchell Trubisky?
So who went number one that year? I forget.
Hold on. Let me refresh the page and I'll get it. Because why am I drawing such a blank? Oh, yeah. Our buddy Myles Garrett. That's who I thought it was, but
Miles
I didn't want to misspeak.
And where is 2017 Mahomes or is 2018 Mahomes?
No, Mahomes is in this draft. And so is Deshaun Watson. And then the Browns still take a
quarterback.
So you got
Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes both went after Mitch Trubisky. That, there you go. It's insanity. It's ridiculousness.
But the very next guy in the second round, pick 52, we're in the whereabouts of where the Steelers got Chase Claypool this year, they needed to go get a quarterback. He could have got ahead of a guy the caliber of Deshaun Kaiser to the Cleveland Browns.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yay!
Davis Webb to the Giants in the third round. 49ers, C.J. Beathard, also third round. Josh Dobbs, fourth round to the Steelers. Nathan Peterman to the Buffalo Bills in the fifth. And then Brad Kaya in the sixth. Chad Kelly in the seventh. And Chad Kelly, I do believe, was Mr. Irrelevant that year. Yes, he was. And, you know, he actually had some opportunity. It was a lot of off-field stuff there that really teams have very short patience for. But who was that? Was it Colin Dunlap or Andrew Filippone, one of these Pittsburgh radio guys that said, go out, make an offer to the Dolphins. Would they say third-round pick for Josh Rosen?
Stupid.
No, I wouldn't give a third. No third-round pick. No third-round pick. Third is way too high. I would give maybe a sixth at the very highest. I mean, the amount of equity that has been given with this guy already. I mean, he was taken 10th overall by the Cardinals in 2018. And then the Dolphins traded a second-round pick that in a fifth-round pick. Now, they'd already had the second-round pick from another trade with the Saints to get him, and he still didn't really crack the roster. six games played. He lost all three of his starts. He had a 53.2% completion percentage for 567 yards, one touchdown, and five picks. He had 11 TDs and 14 picks with Arizona. I understand both teams are – they really stink, but I don't know. This is a guy that you go out and reach and give a second round and a fifth. I mean, that's pretty. I mean, although he was 10th overall, but he couldn't beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Here's the reason I'm out on him. His name is Joshua Ballinger Lippincott Rosen. That's too many damn names.
Well, it's I'm four, out. So he's not a serial killer. If it was three, you know. I don't even know. I didn't even know all that until I just looked. Joshua Ballinger Lippincott Rosen. I thought you made that up. God, this makes me feel old. This guy was born in 97, Brian. These guys are almost going to be born in the 2000s here shortly.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's crazy. Look, Professor, back in the back rooms when this first got brought up, he said it the best. why are you going to overpay for a prima donna who has yet to prove that he's worth being a prima donna? Because that's, by all accounts, he's a prima donna guy who thinks he's the shizzle. And so far, he's been the fizzle.
I like that. It has a flow to it. You're pretty much a natural there.
channeling my inner Snoop Dogg.
Your inner for shizzle dizzle.
Yeah, for shizzle.
Yeah,
for shizzle, Matt Wizzle.
You know who I'm going to bring up. Well, you talk about all the other quarterbacks. I mean, you go before Ben Roethlisberger, and everything was you still had to find the guy. Had to find the guy. Whether it was Cordell Stewart, Mike Tomczak, or Kent Graham, or Jim Miller, or there were some other guys that were brought in too, like a Brian St. Pierre that was like a QB3 that didn't really sniff any playing time and things of that nature. You know what I mean? And when you finally get a Ben, you realize how spoiled you are, but you don't ever know where that next Ben is going to be. It's like finding the next Michael Jordan or anything like that, or the next Tom Brady or whatever. It just doesn't operate in those terms. And just thinking that you absolutely have to have that guy for the ideal scenario of the Brett Favre transition to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, oh, it's my favorite. Here's my favorite guy, Brian. Let me bring up the Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, okay. Well, Aaron Rodgers, when he finally becomes a full-time starter here, now, he didn't have a whole lot to show for beforehand. He gets to play just a little bit, 9 of 16, 56.3% completed, 65 yards and a pick in 2005, his first year, 6 of 15, 40% completed, 46 yards, no TDs, no interceptions. 20 of 28 in 2007, that's a little more accurate, 71.4, 218 yards and a TD, no picks. Okay, that's good. We get to 2008, they're like, hey, we're done with you. We shove Brett Favre out the door. Okay, this is the transition. And he goes 6-10 as their starter. They missed the playoffs after previously already having been in the playoffs and used to being there all the time. Very much like the Steelers, it was not an instant success. He was completing a decent amount, 63.6% of his passes. He had 4,000 yards passing. He had 28 TDs, but he also threw 13 interceptions. He didn't become the TD throwing machine that didn't throw as many picks. He's never really been a big interception guy. I mean, he had 7 the next year and 11 then, but it wasn't until like really his fourth year as a starter where he really honed himself as the all-pro. I mean, he did make it to the Pro Bowl his second year as a starter with an 11-5 record, but he ended up being 14-1 as a starter, 4,643 yards, 45 TDs, and 6 interceptions. The following year, 39 TDs, 8 interceptions on 4,200-some yards. Those are the two seasons that really anchor, I guess, some of his legacy. He's had a couple of more, but he has never really thrown double-digit picks, but there's been times where he's been banged up. He missed seven games here in 2013. He missed, another nine games in 2017, that aforementioned Brett Hundley season. So you're just never always going to have the next guy lying in wait in queue there. They just, they kind of dumb lucked their way into this. It was like this guy just was sitting there in the first round. They were a good football team that didn't have any major needs, and they had that pick, and really where else were they going to go with it? They knew Brett Favre was older. Who's to say this doesn't happen with the Steelers in another year or two? provided Ben Roethlisberger is still doing good, they have, you know, some Super Bowl runs in the next year or two. They realize after getting an extended look or peek at Mason Rudolph or whoever else they may have on the roster that they need to move in another direction. This could happen. This could certainly happen once again with somebody else, but it doesn't mean that you pull the trigger and you reach and you force the issue to make it so, because you cannot will it into existence to be the same thing as Aaron Rodgers replacing Brett Favre.
No, you absolutely can't. It's a rarity that happens. You know, almost unheard of that you have the next guy truly in place when your current Hall of Fame quarterback decides to hang up the cleats. So yeah, you cannot force that. It's serendipity, right? You know, the stars align and you happen to have it in that position, then great. But the likelihood of that occurring, slim to none. And we'll see how look, we're going to have an opportunity to sort of see that with the New England Patriots this year after their Hall of Fame quarterback went to Tampa Bay so that Bruce Arians can kill him. and you know, see what happens there. We'll see. We will see, because this is going to be all of the people who, you know, have said Belichick is that much better than Tomlin, and he's just the greatest coach ever. And I'm not debating that he may not be the greatest coach ever. I'm simply saying we'll see how he does when he's got nobody playing quarterback.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I think they look at like the New Orleans Saints, for example. I think they look at them and they see, oh, well, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, this is, he ended up keeping this team afloat, blah, blah, blah. Well, Drew Brees was hurt. And yeah, that's true. But they had to take a chance on this guy and make sure he didn't have a noodle knee because he was, yeah, you know, he was on the shelf for quite some time. And who knew how good he would actually be. And even when you look at Teddy Bridgewater, okay, he went 5-0. He had a good support system around him. He's already been in the league a few years. He already had a lot of starting experience, whereas somebody like Mason Rudolph did not. He was also a first round, granted it was number 32 overall, he was still a first round draft pick. Okay, he had maybe a little bit higher a pedigree coming out of college than maybe Mason Rudolph. I know Mason was in some of those, no, I'm not going there, that's draft Twitter, not going to talk about it, but there were some people that were discussing that. Could he have been a first round pick? Could they have six quarterbacks go in the first round? Who knows? But you know, it's one of those things where, okay, Bridgewater, hey, he ends up being a really great quarterback. They don't have him anymore. They had to go and get Jameis Winston. Could Jameis do the same thing? Maybe. Who knows? We don't know that for sure. Can Taysom Hill do it? I have my doubts there. Serious doubts.
No.
That's the way I certainly feel. So, well, you're keeping the boat afloat there with the Saints. The Steelers, you know, they had some things go the other way. I don't think Teddy Bridgewater necessarily had a wide receiver drop the ball in field goal range of an all-pro future, probably a Hall of Fame kicker. If you're going to put anybody in, I'd probably put Justin Tucker into that conversation.
Yeah, I don't want to say it because it makes my stomach hurt.
Oh, it
yeah.
does. I just swallowed a little bit of the vomit that came up the back of my throat here. But, you know, saying any pleasantries about any Baltimore Ravens is just – it doesn't happen here often. But I'll give credit where it's due. He's a hell of a kicker. So you give the guy a chip shot, it's not going to help your chances to win. When you fumble within the 20 against the Kyle Shanahan, brilliant offensive mind, and they could score a game-winning touchdown, it doesn't bode well for your backup quarterback and make him look better. One of those games goes the other way, as it more than like I'm going to say it should have. The Steelers end up in the playoffs where they were a game out. They were in the contention right up until the end. And that's a hell of a job. The thing that you're seeing here is it wasn't necessarily Michael Vick kept the boat afloat or Landry Jones kept the boat afloat. It was Mike Tomlin kept the ship steered in the right direction. This is coaching. It's good and great coaching. Whether or not you like that statement or not, well, there, I said it. It's not even that hot of a take, to be honest. Here's the hottest take. You know I was going here, and I was waiting to go here when it came to veteran quarterbacks in the Steelers and backup quarterbacks. So one beloved Charlie Batch. Here's a guy that was a local guy, Steel Valley High School, played in Detroit, was a starter for four seasons, went 25-30, 61 touchdowns to 52 interceptions, 56. Oh no, I'm sorry. Let me pull back on that. It was 49 touchdowns to 40 interceptions, 56.0 completion percentage. He was 19-27 as a starter with the Detroit Lions. Comes to Pittsburgh, ends up playing 8 years, of which the Steelers tried to get rid of him a couple of times too. Actually succeeded, I believe, and then had to bring him back. They had tried to move on in the direction of a Dennis Dixon, Byron Leftwich, another name that we could probably bring up with similar stats. But I always bring up Charlie because, well, it says Charlie is 6-3 as a starter. Some of the games he came in, he had a really great game, I think, against, there was like a 40-something, the whatever, blowout of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But there were a lot of bailout games where Jeff Reed was kicking a few field goals, or you had Troy Polamalu pull the rabbit out of a hat and score a touchdown or something of that nature with tremendous defensive effort. Not much different than what we're seeing here with the Steelers right now and last season. Yes, there was a lot of defensive effort that propped up a woeful offense, but when Charlie was out there, Charlie threw 12 touchdowns to 12 interceptions and barely completed 60% of his passes. He's on the cusp here with 59.4 completion percentage. He ended up starting 9 games over those 8 years, but he appeared in 33 of them. And when you put those numbers up a dozen there, either way, 12-12 on TD interceptions, it's not much different than Landry's 8-7. Almost, if you double up Landry's numbers, where Landry threw for 1,310 yards, he's about 700 shy and about half as many games played as Charlie Batch. They were very similar in many ways. I just feel that has to do a lot with just the coaching. I think overall, the coaching has more of an aspect. There's some type of blueprint here that either holds the guys back. It's more or less like, don't kill us. And we've heard Mike Tomlin, we've heard it from the horse's mouth, right? Don't kill us. Whether it's Duck Hodges, whether it's Mason Rudolph, it was the same thing with Charlie Batch, Landry Jones. We saw usually Charlie or Landry have their best games. I know he won a game against the Ravens, but he had a horrible one the before that. I think there was like 7-8 turnovers overall. There was fumbles, 4 or 5 interceptions. That was against Cleveland Browns on the road. I was at that game. And actually, I ended up getting sick. And later in that week, I had the flu and watched them, Charlie, actually lead the Steelers to a win. Couple of clutch passes that were completed. Hey, great for him. Those are great memories. But those don't necessarily overshadow the fact that if he had to play an extended season, I don't know that the Steelers are much better than an 8-8 team. They probably have much of the same philosophy of don't kill us.
Yeah, look, that is a standardized statement, I think, when it comes to backup quarterbacks. Don't kill us. That's all you want them to do, not kill you, because that's the reason they're a backup, is because as a starter, they would likely kill you. over an extended period of time, they're not going to be good enough to get you where you want to go in most cases. Now, again, Mason Rudolph, we don't really know that for sure yet. I have my suspicions. Others believe otherwise. That's okay. I hope I'm wrong. We will sadly be finding out in a few years, one way or the other, whether this is Ben's hurrah season or whether it's next season or whether it's even one more after that. It ain't far off. And at that point, it is likely to be the Mason Rudolph show unless they figure something else out in between now and then.
Yeah, and it might not be any prettier there, but hey, I'll carry water for these guys. I'll support them until I don't. But hey, I supported Landry quite a bit. I thought he got a lot more flack. I just think that the bar is just raised so high. And you got to understand, too, I think one of the better things that may have boded well for Mason, at least early on in the season last year, I do think he played scared. I have no doubts about that. When he came back from the concussion, but before that, I thought he had some tight window passes. I don't know if completing, this where Vance McDonald was involved, and then when Mason got hurt, and then Vance McDonald disappeared the rest of the year. That's exactly what happened. In fact, he threw 2 touchdowns to him in that Ravens game before he got knocked out by Earl Thomas. And I think the closer you are to having played college, the further you get away from that college career and taking a lot of repetition, a lot of snaps, and not getting that practice, especially when you jump up to the pro level, I don't think it bodes well, especially when you're a backup. But backups, I think people think that these guys get 100% of whatever in practice, and it's usually that's not the case. They're barely getting any kind of action. So when they come in cold off the bench, no less, in the middle of a game, that really sucks. When they come in and you don't have much time to prepare for an opponent too, Mason against the Cleveland Browns, Michael Vick against the Ravens, Thursday night games. You're getting set up for failure in those cases. And, the short turnaround time and things like that, the amount of practice, the amount of reps, you have to grow. I think it was really a learning process last year with the Steelers. I say give these guys a chance. You also had Randy Fichtner wearing multiple hats, quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator. They weren't expecting to not have Ben Roethlisberger. When you have Ben Roethlisberger, I don't know that you necessarily need a quarterback's coach, but now you realize, well, when we don't have Ben Roethlisberger, we need a guy that's able to help coach up guys like Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges, maybe a Paxton Lynch or somebody like that. So it'll be interesting going forward. You know, we're under the presumption there's going to be a full football season. The NFL sure thinks so. So the Steelers, you know, they only sold half of the leftover tickets, which, when it comes to leftover tickets, we're really talking about the upper end zone bleacher seats. Yeah. There's not a whole lot. And, everything is practically – there's even season tickets in that area and season ticket holders. So we'll see what ends up happening and what their approach is. But under that assumption, you know, we're thinking Ben shaved the beard. We know the governor of Pennsylvania wasn't happy with that, as we said before. But we're all happy with it because, hey – He's supposed to be back. He's supposed to be great. We just hope he doesn't come out with the old gunslinger doesn't have it five interception type game when he had against the Jags a few years ago. But hey, even the greats like Ben Roethlisberger end up having games like that. It's just a matter of you can get away with that when you've already won got two Super Bowl rings and you've been playing at a high level for an exceptionally long period of time. You go and do that in your first or second year, it's the not for long league is what the NFL stands for.
Absolutely. There's no up. Oh, there it is. I knew I was going to get an absolutely in before the end of this show. Absolutely. There it is. Bam. Oh, yeah. Somebody set the counter back to, we're back at the this is the number of days without Brian saying absolutely.
It's like the however many days without a workplace incident.
Yeah, exactly.
We need that sign again. Well, Brian, thanks for joining me once again. I had to rant on this. There's so many things, and we still almost had like an hour here. We didn't even get into shenanigans early. We probably could have made this a little bit longer for everyone out there because we should get all the clicks and the views and listens and everything like that, right?
Absolutely. And just so you'll know, I know you noticed that I posted this picture of my leg the other day. All that's already faded. It was definitely the heat thing. So that's good. And for anybody who doesn't know, I had this weird rash on my leg and I didn't know what it was. Anyway, everybody was saying stuff like it's bed bugs or I got the coronavirus or whatever. Or fleas. That was your contribution. Fleas.
Hey, it's happened. It's happened.
Absolutely. We were infested at one point because the cats had fleas. And then we had to fumigate and do all kinds of crap. It was a pain in the butt to get rid of them. But then they were gone. And thankfully, they're not back. But it's all fading away now. Until I go and do another Spartan virtual run.
Well, the virtual run, you do that. Overheat. You do that in front of the TV, my friend. You don't go outside.
No. Virtual run means you go and do it by yourself and do the run. I did it. I did 5.5 miles with my 20 obstacles the other day, and I was very psyched.
Hey, there's some guy that made like one of those American Ninja Warrior courses for squirrels. Did you happen to see that? That was going viral around the internet. I'm probably going to give them like another couple thousand views. Yeah, for squirrels. It's like outside of like an apartment complex. I don't remember where it's at, like California or something like that. But yeah, for squirrels, it's like an obstacle course for them.
Tell them to come over here and build me one, man. hell with squirrels. I'll give me a Ninja Warrior course.
Hey, you know what? If it keeps them out of the vegetables, having some problems point, with that. But anyways, there we go. We had to get some nonsense in. So, Brian, thanks. Thanks for absolutely joining me once again today.
Of course. Always happy to be here and spend some time pontificating on craziness and the Steelers.
Absolutely. And we'll just leave it at that. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Until next time, folks, my name's Joe. His name's Brian. We ask everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later. We'll
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.